So we are with Peter. Hi, Peter.
Yo.
Hey, we want to talk about Fire to the Prisons, the magazine edit in New York. You can call it insurrectionary anarchist magazine?
Insurrectionary magazine, for sure. The people who are involved with it are definitely interested in anarchist thinking, but it's not exclusive to only anarchists, because it's not only anarchists that excite me in regards to being frustrated with the world or looking to, resist in their everyday lives, you know?
Yeah.
But definitely an insurrectionary publication, for sure. And something that's anti-authoritarian on a totalistic level, you know?
What is the most important subject or struggles you covered in the last times?
It's hard to really say what is most important, and I think that every struggle against things that control or manipulate and so on in people's everyday lives is something to be inspired by or appreciate. In the last issue, at least, from 2 months ago, we focused on two specific occurrences that happened recently, one of which was riots in Oakland, and basically the insurrection that happened in December in Greece. And in the next issue, we intend to follow up on both as well, particularly in regards to Oakland, what's happened with Oakland, which what we described was an individual who was killed by the subway police, provoked a response from people around Oakland, also like self-appointed anarchists or radicals in the Bay Area, to basically attack and fight the police, and really not only sanction a particular riot that happened in January, but also kind of was a gateway for a lot more of publicly recognized frustration with the police. In the next issue, we intend to cover an individual named Lavelle Nixon, for example, who killed four police a few weeks after the murder over a routine traffic stop, and also some of the gang violence directed to police as opposed to fellow individuals in the community that's happened in the Bay Area recently. And Greece was a really important thing for us to look at, considering we had some comrades out there who were personally engaged in experiencing what was going on, and also the kind of wave of solidarity that was heard all over the world by other sympathetic radicals, specifically anarchists. Whether it be through solidarity actions in the States or some of the riots are provoked in Europe, what we were most excited about was to learn from the experience of people there and hear what they had to say and try and report on that so others could learn for trying to push in the direction of what happened there. It was a really exciting thing to witness. Unfortunately, the end was there wasn't really an end, because there really is no end or beginning to insurrection, but it certainly disrupted the normalcy of everyday life there and was an incredibly exciting thing. I definitely can't really prioritize any specific struggle, All struggle is important to us if it looks to attack what controls it,
Yes. Yeah, some people are at least looking at your magazine like some ways individualist or just wanted to spread information about affinity groups or people acting isolatedly.
Okay.
What do you think?
You mean like promoting like a specialized struggle, or like armed struggle, or people who specifically do clandestine or isolated actions?
In a more isolated ways.
Okay. Well, I don't totally understand that necessarily. The magazine started off, it was in response to repression. When we started it towards self-appointed anarchists or people acting militantly in defense of animals or the environment. It started off in intending to try and be a forum for a positive response to the repression, and that being the idea of a revolutionary style of solidarity. And we tried to raise awareness regarding comrades or individuals who were experiencing some pretty intense repression due to resistance or projects they were working on. And we tried to, you know, most of the information that was coming out at the time was kind of reactionary and, like, discouraging, where it was like, this sucks, so we should respond. You know, of course we should show financial and legal support for friends who are arrested, but we thought it would also be important on top of that to try and show examples of how people were supporting prisoners by continuing the struggle that the state was trying to silence by imprisoning them. So it started off mostly as just information regarding prisoners, and then we chose solidarity actions specifically, which unfortunately are relatively clandestine because they're, you know, special interests. It's related to a particular individual who was arrested, and trying to show support for them while also trying to provide a source of encouragement or empowerment for other people who are becoming frightened due to repression they're witnessing. You know, the first issue came out, and the second issue we tried to include some analysis, because when you're doing something that has limited funding, or it's kind of hard to print something and put so much time into something where the information is constantly changing in regards to new arrests, or individuals becoming snitches and we're no longer wanting to support them, or and so on, you know. I think it was important, if we're going to be doing a paper publication, to include a certain degree of analysis of the things we're reporting on, and also try and include information that people anywhere can read and be excited about in a certain way. So in the second issue, we started to include some articles, and our distribution was pretty surprising. Like, it was pretty exciting. And the third issue, we really tried to escalate it, and we did our first largest, like, print run. We did, like, about 2,000 for the third, featuring a lot of stuff, actually, about the Olympics in Canada, and also kind of pushing the solidarity action thing, because that was kind of the original intention of the magazine. And we wanted to escalate it beyond just supporting prisoners, and also showing it how, you know, in response to these, the fetishization of, like, kind of like activism or community organizing, to show how anarchists were intervening and showing support for non-anarchist social struggles, specifically indigenous struggles in Canada in this particular issue.
And when you did.
While, of course, in every issue, also including information on prisoners, because it's an important thing to us. We also included a new chronology of prison rioting in the third issue, and tried to escalate the content and distribution and try and push it to more of a quarterly magazine. And the fourth issue, we tried to, you know, just kind of continue in that direction. And our fifth issue now, we've kind of stuck with this kind of decentralized distribution, where we're responsible for printing about, you know, 2,000 copies an issue ourselves, and then trying to informally have relationships with other sympathetic projects internationally who are distributing the magazine. We feel like it helps further distribution and helps provide kind of like a international affinity with different projects coming from different perspectives and so on, and relating with each other through an affinity of this type of sympathy. So I'd say that internationally our distribution is like around between like 6,000 to 8,000, and pretty well distributed and received in South America and Europe, the Balkans, and North America, specifically Canada and the States, and also pretty well distributed in Mexico. It's kind of exciting to be putting out a project that is internationally recognized like that, across so many borderlines and perspectives. The next issue we hope will also help provide some new ways of looking at organizing conflict, ways people have been doing it in the States recently, and learning from things that we've witnessed in Europe over the last few months, and of course always supporting in prison comrades, whether they be you know, formally sentenced or just in prison. I guess it's really confusing to hear an accusation of individualists. Historically, that's always kind of meant someone who is
isolation, like,
yeah,
to
well,
be isolated or to be injurious. But
I don't know. I guess I wanted to, I was kind of passively throwing out its distribution as an example that it's not very well isolated. In fact, the magazine is unique because we are probably only responsible for about 30% of its distribution and publishing. Like, we're 100% responsible for putting the magazine out, but in terms of it being distributed internationally in paper, as well as on the internet, we're only about, you know, a portion of who's responsible. And we find that it's exciting because it contains a lot of different information on a lot of different struggles that all look to attack, you know, the appendages or infrastructure of the state economy, industry, and everything else that, you know, manipulates and controls our everyday lives. We're kind of veering away more and more from just an explicit political identity, like anarchism or communists or any of these things, because we're kind of realizing more and more that to identify or associate with one particular politic or interests is inherently isolated. We're not really interested in proposing new identities or subcultures or aesthetics. We're just interested in proposing directions and strategies to deal with the frustration that we all feel with this horrible world, you know?
Yeah.
Whether or not that is a political thing or not, I think that our intention is to become more of a forum for something that is not interested in playing politics, considering that politics is the game of power, you know?
Yeah.
And looking to...
It's more about anti-politics.
It's more about destroying politics.
Yeah.
And to destroy politics, you can't really play the games of that. You have to build relationships independent of political identity, I think, right? I mean, unfortunately, it is obvious that the magazine is pretty well received within a specific political community or group of people thinking a certain way, you know? But we do hope, you know, it is influencing a certain tendency that we personally appreciate. And we hope that the energy and that we put into the publication is felt and heard by whoever, you know, has the opportunity to read it. And we mostly hope that it's helping to provoke new, stronger solidarity and awareness about different struggles that we could build new affinities with, as well as just keeping an awareness about imprisoned comrades, which, whether or not that is becoming less and less of a featured part of the magazine, it's still an important thing for us, considering that, you know, they're in prison, and it sucks to be in prison. But I don't know, I feel like each issue is getting better and better, and we're growing with each issue. And the thing about the issue that I think distinguishes it from other magazines is that even though we have much analysis and writing, and it's hard to really call it theory because most of our analysis, specifically in the last few issues, has been based in things that are currently occurring. Learning from the riots, talking about the experiences of people, you know, and I feel like each issue is as good as what's going on in the world in the last few months, you know?
Yeah. Do you receive a lot of letters or articles from other people in your crew?
In my crew?
No, from others outside of your crew.
Oh, yeah.
The crew around fire to the prison.
Yeah, we get a lot of different stuff, a lot of random stuff. It's funny because I'm so used to seeing like anarchist publication with lots of hate mail. Haven't really gotten any. We've gotten contributions that have appeared in some of the last few issues. We got a few contributions for the next issue, some of which might appear in the next issue. We get a lot of letters because we try to find out who's distributing it and where, and we've gotten some pretty exciting letters from Mexico of people really excited. Letters we're not completely comfortable with because they are very explicit with different information, you know? But inspiring letters that give us an encouragement to keep doing a project that takes so much time and energy, and you can never really determine how well received it is or if it's received at all. And if you're not just trying to provide yourself with some petty purpose or thing to do, you know? We've gotten a lot of letters or emails mostly from Germany and Holland and some of the more English-speaking parts of Europe. We've gotten letters from some people who have translated some of it into Spanish, and we're trying to actually get someone proposed to translate the next issue into Spanish, which is a possibility. It's a lot of fucking work and a lot to deal with and a lot of extra work on us, even though we're not actually going to be translating it. Just a matter of being patient with someone else, you know? We've gotten email like 2 weeks ago from Venezuela, saying it that it was pretty well received by a few people there. I don't know how many or who specifically. And we've just gotten, you know, we get lots of random orders as well from places that aren't info shops or anything in particular. Who knows who reads it or how many people exactly, you know? We never really can tell, but there's a few people that, you know, are excited about it and tell us to keep doing it. I just hope that people keep resisting and attacking things so we can keep writing about it.
Yeah. You deal with a lot of issues very repressed, like the so-called war against terrorism, like the Green Scare repression. In the last issue, you deal with like autonomous struggles in France who are very repressed now on the same level, or about the same war against terrorism. And you talk about like the 2010 Olympics and the struggles against the 2010 is also like very looking like a possibility of terrorist organization or struggles against 2010. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that?
How do I feel? Well, in the next issue, there's a submission about fear, about, you know, whether or not we'd like to admit this, there is, you know, to be concerned with everyday life and to try and act in a way that looks to confront it as opposed to accept it is a very specialized thing in this world. It's sad. And it's really important, I think, to recognize that they're as tough as people want to pretend they are or can be, and as many risks as people can take, people will always be anxious. So we actually are including an article about confronting that anxiousness and hearing about the experiences of individuals who have dealt with anxiety when you're living a life of constant risk, or you're living a life that is considered an enemy of the state. So how do we feel about that? It's really scary when you feel a certain way and your life is built around a certain set of feelings, and you are basically, you know, whether or not we want to call it something, you're basically doing journalism about repression. And you hear so many stories and so many sentences and so many anvils dropped by the state onto communities of people that it's very disheartening and very disempowering at certain points. But at the same time, specifically around the indigenous struggles in Canada, specifically around the Green Scare in the States, which, you know, the repression of animal and environmental resistance or whatever.
Like the repression against the Liberation Front and the Animal Liberation Front, mm-hmm. and the SHEC, the Stop Attempt on Animal Cruelty, and some other organization like that.
Or in Europe, you know, against the autonomous in France, or also, I mean, the squatter movement in Denmark, or you know, the anarchists in Greece, or, you know, the autonomous movement in Germany, or the squatter movement in Germany. You also hear about people being arrested and people continuing to fight. And that's why we would like to combine them, because the implications of struggle continuing when circumstances are hard suggests an empowered struggle, and a struggle that can't be eliminated by the state. I mean, we say this in every issue. It's like, you know, the state will try to eliminate that which is pushing for its elimination, you know? But the state exists in a way that everyone who's controlled by it is frustrated. So as long as the state exists, frustration will still exist. And as long as frustration exists, resistance against the state will come out in some way or another. So as intimidating and sad and disheartening as all the repression is to hear about constantly, it's balanced out with the empowering knowledge of attack and resistance that continues all the time in so many different contexts by so many different people. And we kind of want to be a forum for something that pushes an awareness about both of those things.
Do you think this movement or of rupture against the states, against capital, are increase or decrease actually?
In the states?
Yeah, no, in the states or whatever.
I think that the last few years actually has been a really exciting transition. I mean, the States is pretty unique from a lot of the parts of the world because the historical presence of like radical or militant or anarchist thinking is not at all the same as places like Europe or South America, you know. So we have obviously a huge portion of what I would call assimilated radicalism, which is witnessed in the form of subculture or, like, you know, weird aesthetics or, like, political identities, you know. And that's not anything that I'm interested in or the publication is interested in. It's actually something we look to very specifically disconnect from, because that's not exciting to us. But there is a transition where a lot of people who I feel like are looking to provoke certain types of social conflict that I find exciting with the state and similar institutions a lot more people are finding an affinity because as people begin to move away from politics, they also begin to move away from things like ideology and identity. And when you get away from like petty aesthetics and interests such as that, you begin to discover a mutual frustration among comrades who are already radicalized and aware of the circumstances that surround them and look to respond in a violent or confrontational way. And you also build a community of people that is non-exclusive and very accessible and easily generalized, because when you begin to move away from politics and come down to things like frustration, you begin to be able to meet many more sincere and just many more people who can feel the similar way. That's something that I've noticed in the last 3 or 4 years that is like incredibly important and incredibly apparent and exciting. And a lot of things in the States that have happened in the last few years, some of the riots that have been associated with like anarchist influences, or just some of the riots that have happened in regards to just horrible things that happened every day in the States, has been escalating. And it's the same, I mean, in Europe, like, you know, I guess I'm talking mostly about First World, because, you know, the First World, when there's more conflict, it's generally more unique than conflict in the Third World.
Because
they're so comfortable with their everyday lives and in a position of privilege.
Struggles.
Yeah. But, I mean, I don't know, Greece, France a few months ago, everywhere right now. I think that it's really exciting to look at how there's more of a popular acceptance of militancy against the state, specifically the police, or like against infrastructure of capital, like in the cities, you know, the burning and attacking of symbols of wealth and so on, especially before the, you know, economic crisis, you know, whatever that means in comparison to before. But yeah, it's incredibly exciting and inspiring. I definitely think that anarchists are or just, you know, people that read this magazine or would be interested in reading the magazine are definitely creating some projects that I'm pretty excited about, you know?
How do people can find Fire to the Prisons?
Well, you can go to firetotheprisons.com if you'd like to download the PDF. We also have a blog of mostly just reports of different resistance and repression at... unfortunately, myspace.com/alongingforcollapsepress. But firetotheprisons.com hopefully will be more updated in terms of a blog aspect too, but all the PDFs for all the issues are linked there. In terms of it being sold, it's, I mean, at every info shop, at least in the States, I'm pretty sure that it's aware of. It's at many different bookstores in San Francisco and New York, and it's distributed in info shops in South America and Europe, but I'm not sure. I mean, there's lots of just different distributors who table tons of different events, and we get orders all the time through mail. You can order it off the website, the email's there and so on, and the PDF is online, so it's not that hard to read.
Can you talk about other publications you are interested in?
When you do a magazine like this that takes like a month of unhealthy living to do, because it's not only designing, writing, and all that shit, we also have to figure out the way to make the money to put it out, because we give a lot away for free to different prisoner groups to fund themselves, or we just give away a lot away for free, so we like throw parties and then take the money and reappropriate it. But it's hard to keep up to date a lot of the time with like publications coming out. When you're done with this, you don't want to read for 3 months, you know? I guess I mostly read stuff on the internet. 325 is a publication we're pretty excited about. They also do a lot of distribution for us. 325collective.com. It's out of Britain. They have a lot of interesting updates from over there. There's we have our friends in California, the Modesto Anarcho. They distribute our publication and do a lot of interesting projects out there. They have MySpace, but I think their website might actually be modestoanarcho.tk. It's a pretty localized project, but they're definitely friends of ours who we have a great deal of affinity with. There was a publication that we were really excited about that we include some excerpts from in our few issues called To the Restless out of Washington that came out. Our friends in Milwaukee, they do a publication called Total Destroy, which we're pretty excited about as well, also called Toward the Queerest Insurrection. Total Destroy actually comes out pretty frequently. It's a pretty good publication. When there's a new Midwest publication that comes out now called Words and Letters. I haven't read it yet, but it seems like it's done by some pretty cool people, so that's exciting. Pretty sure that Words and Letters is pretty available. There's a publication that came out recently, Santa Cruz, California, I think, I'm not sure, called Utopia Emergency. It was a lot of reprints, stuff from we've actually had in here in our magazine. It came out a few weeks ago, but you know, it seemed like it was pretty well received or responded to.
Maybe what you think about the indigenous struggles in Canada, because one of your last issue was on indigenous struggles in Canada. About also specifically the anti 2010 Olympics.
That was our issue from last summer, so it was like 3 issues ago. In every issue we include, next issue as well, we always include an action of some sort that happened in correspondence with the eventual event, just to provide promotion for it, because it's something we're pretty sympathetic to. It's inspiring to see the relationship between, because there's a, in the States, a lot of people who identify as anarchists are generally very disconnected from people outside of a certain milieu, and very confused about how to relate with people who aren't them, you know? It's exciting, for example, like in Chile, you know, you saw like a lot of anarchist solidarity conducted with Mapuche struggles, which was something else that was featured in that issue. And Canada, a lot of the resistance that we read about that was conducted in solidarity with indigenous struggles here is like really exciting.